We're going to finish up our discussion of bonds with bond yield spreads, the yield curve, and some valuation techniques. So let's get started on slide number 20 with the yield spread. Remember the spread we talked about back in chapter 5, the difference between the bid and the ask price? It's the same idea, but this is the difference between different bond pricing and different bond yields. Slide number 20. The yield spreads are the differences in interest rates that exist among various sectors of the bond market. In general, the shorter the maturity, the lower the rate. The longer the maturity, the higher the rate. Now, think about this for a moment. If you're going to lend money, and you're going to lend it for a short period of time, well, you are not too worried about things going badly. Maybe they might. But if you're going to lend it for a very long period of time, well, who knows what might happen in the interim. So you're going to demand a higher rate if the maturity is far into the future. The next category is the rating of the bond. The higher the rating of the bond, the lower the interest rate, and vice versa. Again, if you have a good credit score, you get the best interest rates, and if you have a bad credit score, you have to pay far more. And the same thing is true for bond issuers. And then in the pecking order starts with treasuries. The United States government is the best. Well, right now they've had their credit rating lowered, but it's a bit of a cruel joke that the United States Treasury will pay its debts. Well, won't they? Yeah, so well. Muni bonds are next, general obligation bonds being normally better credit risks than revenue bonds, because remember the revenue project has to generate enough revenue to pay off the bonds, but most of them do. And then corporate bonds, because corporations can and do go bankrupt. Municipalities can, it's very rare, and the Treasury never has. And then we value non-callable bonds over callable bonds, which means non-callable bonds usually pay less interest than callable bonds. Slide 21. Here are some yield spreads from your chapter 6, and this is a couple of years old, but still fairly close, especially in the short term, to what the Treasury bonds are paying. Actually, it's even a little less than this, and the corporate bond rates have actually gone down in the interim. This, the book, the last version of the book was in 2009. So if you want to see the current yield spreads, just check out the link, finance.yahoo.com, and you can use that link or drill down through Yahoo going to bonds and then composite bond rates, and you'll see it. In fact, that's part of your assignment is to, well, for Chapter 9, is to compare the spreads, compare Treasury bonds with corporate bonds and the like. And we see that the farther out you go, the higher the yield for treasuries. And look at the 3 month paying 0.03, 0.06, it's ridiculously low. And you'll see that the yields currently are even lower than this. And then the same thing is true for corporate bonds. The longer we go out, the more interest investors demand. And notice that a AAA 5-year bond pays less than a AA pays less than an A bond, right? I'm sorry, say that again. A AAA pays less than a AA, right, which pays less than a single A bond. Make sense? Yeah, make sure you understand that. Slide number 22. Often investors will speak about the bond spreads as being tight or wide. A tight spread means the interest rates among the bonds they are evaluating are very close to one another. A treasury may be paying 4.8%, a corporate bond paying 5.1%. Well, that's a pretty tight spread. It's 0.3%. But what the people in the industry is will say, that's 300 basis points. And you go, what? A basis point is 0.01. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 30 basis points. 30 basis points, 0.01%. So that would be 30, but I don't really like basis points. Why don't you just tell me what the interest rate is? So each 0.01 is 1 basis point, so that would be 30 basis points. 100 basis points is 1%, right? I don't know why they do that, just to make it sound like they know what they're talking about and you don't. A wide spread means there is a big difference between the bond interest rates. Say Treasury's paying 3.2%, the corporate bond's paying 8.2%, that's 5% or 500 basis points. For several years throughout the 2000s, bond yield spreads were very tight. And during the turmoil of 2008 and 2009, the yield spreads widened to levels not seen since the Great Depression. And since we've come back from the abyss, the yield spreads have narrowed significantly, as you'll see when you take a look at the current ones. Slide number 23. Here's the effect of inflation on bond rates. And what we see is back in 1960, inflation was running about 1% or so. And this is the 10-year bond, right, 10-year bond, was paying about 4%. And then as inflation crept up and then got a little bit out of hand in the late 80s, the interest rates that bond investors were demanding went up with it. And then inflation dropped precipitously, and over the in 1980s, 90s, and 2000s, so did the bond rates, the interest rate on the 10-year Treasury bond. And you'll notice in the year 2008 and 9, inflation actually went pretty bizarre. Deflation. We were fighting, and we still are to some extent, fighting deflation in the housing market, in wages. But you see inflation coming up a little bit in the last year, mostly because of, you know, gas and other food prices. But the housing, no, the housing is not, and wages are not. And we see that inflation and the 10-year bond are basically very similar to one another. Because inflation is the bondholder's worst nightmare. Yes, because you get paid in dollars that are worth less. You understand. All right, exactly. Slide number 24, the yield curve. This is the graph that represents the relationship between a bond's maturity and its yield at a given point in time. We also use it to make comparisons among types of bonds. Normally, the yield curve is upward sloping. Longer-term bonds have higher interest rates than shorter-term bonds and treasury bills. Sometimes the yield curve is downward sloping. It's called an inverted yield curve. And shorter-term bonds and treasury bills have other types of short-term investments have higher interest rates, higher than longer-term. Wait, that doesn't make any sense. Right. Let's take a look at the graphs, and this might make more sense here. Slide number 25. You see, this is normal, number one, an upward-sloping curve. Shorter-term securities, treasury bills, corporate paper, have much less yield than longer-term, and this is normal. But sometimes the curve inverts, where shorter-term interest rates climb higher than longer-term interest rates. That doesn't make any sense. What does it mean? We'll come back to that in a minute. But let's take a look at the yield curve as of March 16, 2012. And you can go look at this. It's on the website. There's a link to it. And you can go to Yahoo and find it yourself under bonds, investing bonds, finance.yahoo.com/bonds or bonds.yahoo.com, or go to Bloomberg or go to MarketWatch or whatever website tickles your fancy, and you'll see that we are indeed an upward sloping curve. There's a little bit of a dip here. Usually that doesn't happen. Usually its highest point is at the very end, the 30-year bond. And so, look, 3 month, 6 month, they're paying almost nothing. And then 3 year, there's the 10-year paying a little bit more than 2%. Just a week and a half ago, it was paying under 2%. People are starting to think that, yeah, maybe the economy is going to come around, in which case they're demanding higher interest rates because they expect interest rates to rise. So that's what we have now, an upward sloping curve. And that's normal. That is normal. Slide number 27. Why do longer-term debt securities normally have higher interest rates than shorter-term debt securities? Well, there are three major hypotheses. The expectations of the shape of the yield curve reflecting investors' expectations of future interest rates. Well, yeah, that makes sense. And then the liquidity preference method, the hypothesis or the maturity preference, investors tend to prefer the liquidity of short-term securities and therefore require a premium to invest in long-term securities, right? Exactly. There are more things that can go wrong in the interim if you have your money out there for a much longer period of time. And then the market segmentation hypothesis, the market for debt is segmented on the basis of maturity, and there are supply and demand relationships within each segment determining the prevailing interest rate. And it's basically, they're all saying basically the same thing. Each of these three theories makes sense, and each has some merit. But how do we account for the times when the yield curve is inverted? What factors could cause an inverted yield curve to occur? And what can the inverted yield curve tell us about the future of an economy? Well, dear students, slide 29, since World War II, the 1940s, every time the yield curve has inverted, short-term rates were higher than long-term rates, the economy has fallen into a recession. The only exception was 1966, when the yield curve inverted and the economy just barely hit 0% growth. It then picked up again, so it didn't go into recession, but close. And currently, the yield curve, as we saw, is mostly upward, which is normally a decent sign, but a full 2 years, about 2 years before the beginning of 2008, the yield curve had been inverted. And so this was very unusual. People were saying, well, are we going into a recession? And the bond market was saying so. The bond market had been predicting a recession for over 2 years. And the stock market, for the most part, throughout the 2000s up until 2008, when the organic matter hit the ventilating device, didn't believe them. It wasn't until fall of 2008 that the officials charged with tracking the economy acknowledged that we were in a recession. It took over 2 years, but the bond ghouls were finally proven right. Now, why do we call them ghouls, the bond ghouls? Well, because they love a recession. What? Are you serious? Yeah, bonds do better in a recession. Stocks get hammered normally, but bonds do well. Why? Because the government, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, tries to lower interest rates, and often is very successful at doing so. And there's less demand for money because of a recession, so interest rates fall on their own. And what do we know about interest rates falling? Right, it's wonderful for bonds. Now, in 2008, everybody got mostly because investors, they liked the idea that interest rates were falling, but they were afraid that the bonds weren't going to pay anything. Treasury bonds did fine because people float. It's called a flight to quality. They flew to the quality, the perceived quality of the federal government. So I often tell people when they ask me about what my thoughts are about our economy, and I call it the Kabuki recession, the Kabuki recovery. And you know what kabuki is? It's that Japanese dance theater. They move so slowly. We just rolled into this thing so slowly, like a train moving at 5 miles an hour, but you can't stop it. And the whole thing it fell off the track and is causing untold destruction. And we're coming out of it ever so slowly. Interest rates are still really low, and unemployment is still very high, but manufacturing is picking up, and consumer spending is picking up, and the number of foreclosures is going down slowly, but we're still not done yet. So, I don't know. Will we be out of it? We'll know in 5 years. And by then, if you hadn't invested by then, well, well. Slide number 30, bond prices. Bonds are normally priced according to the present value of their future cash flows. Oh boy, didn't you wish you would never have to hear that again? Well, that's what bonds give us. They give us future cash flows. They give us the semi-annual interest payments and the repayment of principal. Although other factors always need to be considered, such as the creditworthiness of the issuer. If an issuer runs into trouble, what's going to happen? Right, the price of their outstanding bonds will fall because investors will be afraid of default. And as we saw with the Ford bonds, they'll dump them because they're afraid they're not going to get their money back. And so, barring that there's not a flight away from the bonds, bond investors are going to look at the interest payments that are coming in and the repayment of principal as their future cash flows, and they're going to calculate the present value of that. Now, don't you already know how to do that? Sure you do. You did it in the last, last two exams. You're going to do it in the next two exams, too. Slide 31. Bond price equals the present value of the interest income plus the present value of the repayment of principal. Does that look familiar? It's basically the dividend and earnings model, where we use dividends as our cash flow and the price of the stock when we plan to sell. Well, here we're using the interest income plus the repayment of the principal. Now, annual versus semi-annual compounding. Since bonds pay interest normally every 6 months, we really should be using semi-annual compounding. But hey, annual compounding is easier to compute and will give you almost the same example, same answer. So we'll just use annual. It's much easier. And besides, you really want to use a spreadsheet to do this because using the present value tables is it's the same idea. When we did the dividends and earnings model, we used the present value tables just for very simple calculations, but when we want much more exact, we use a spreadsheet. But in the case of the stock calculations, we were really just making up conjectures and suppositions and speculations about what the dividends are going to be and what the price of the stock is going to be. But with the case of bonds, we know. Bonds are fixed. We know how much interest we're going to get. We know we're going to get $1,000 back, barring any disaster and the company or entity goes bankrupt. We know that. So let's take a look at an example here on slide 32. This is a real bond, folks, and the reason I chose it is because it matures about 8 years from now, actually a little bit earlier, so that throws off the numbers a few couple dollars, and it's priced to yield 4.09%. Well, if you look at the table in Chapter 10, you need to print that table out. It should look familiar. It's really two of the Chapter 6 tables. The first table is the same table, the table on the left. It's the same table we used in Chapter 6, but now we're adding a table on the right. And since these tables are at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7%, I went and looked for a bond that was maturing in close to 8 years and close to one of the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8%. We got 4.09, so pretty close. Republic Services, who are they? Well, they pick up the trash. It's very simple. We looked at waste management. Well, here's Republic Services. You know, there's always going to be trash to pick up. And these bonds pay 5%, $50 a year. But they're priced to yield 4.09, which is close to 4%. So get out that table if you haven't gotten it already. Print it out or take a look at it on the screen. And so how does this work? You take the present value of the interest income plus the present value of the repayment. Now, the interest income is a stream of income, and that's what the table is on the right. So you could do this 8 times. You could do it for year number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, but that's a pain in the patootie, and you would use the table on the left for each individual year, $50 times the first year's present value multiplier, $50 times the second year present value multiplier. You don't want to do that. So you use the table on the right, which says, if I get a dollar every year for the next 8 years at 4%, what is that worth to me today? So you go across the 8%, I'm sorry, you go across the 4%, because it's priced to yield 4%, you go down 8 years, because that's how many years we're going to get this money, and you find 6.733. Did you find that? Make sure you do, 6.733. And we're going to get $50 a year for the next 8 years. So you multiply $50 times 6.733, and that's equal to $336.65. In other words, over the next 8 years, we're going to get $400 in interest, $50 times 8 years. But we discount that. We find the present value of that stream of $400, and we find that at 4%, it's worth $336.65. Obviously, at 8%, it's going to be worth a whole lot less. At 10%, you understand how to do this. Now, what do we get at the end of the 8 years? Well, we get our $1,000 back. So that's a single payment. That's the table on the left. Go across the 4%, down 8 years, and you should see 0.731. You multiply $1,000 times 0.731, and that's $731. In other words, that $1,000 that we're going to get in 8 years at 4% is worth to us today $731. That's the present value. And if you add these two together, you get $1,067.65. That's what the model tells us they're worth, the bonds are worth. And surprise, the quoted price on Yahoo on March 16th was $1,066.90. So you see, bonds truly are boring, folks. The present value calculations give you very close to what the actual price is. Why? Because they're fixed. We know we're going to get that. Not as we speculated what we're going to get with the stocks. We know, unless there's a default. And so why are they, you know, why is it about a buck off? Well, however, we are using 4% instead of 4.09. Plus, the maturity is slightly less than 8 years. Also, we are using yearly interest payments, and bonds actually pay semi-annually. So there's a spreadsheet on the website that I want you to take a look at that does this using the spreadsheets, certainly much more, precise calculations. And the spreadsheet says the bond is really worth $1,060.74 and $1,063.57. So the spreadsheet is actually valuing them a little bit less than what we value them at, but it's about within $6 or $7 or so. So it's very, very close. So I want you to play with that, and also you could take a look at the next page on the spreadsheet. And there'll be a commentary. It's not up yet, but there'll be a commentary. We do the internal rate of return calculation, which is even more precise. Slide number, so you understand that? Now, there's a worksheet, worksheet number one where you do this, there's a commentary and an answer key, worksheet number two, there's an answer sheet, and then there's your assignment, which they're going to ask you to do this, the assignment's going to ask you to do this, and you may, not quite sure, but you may see these on the exam, you may, I'm never quite sure. Slide number 33, let's take a look at a few more characteristics of bonds, and then we'll be done with bonds. Reinvestment risk. Huh? What is reinvestment risk? Well, this is something that bond investors must be aware of. There's not a whole lot you can do about it. It's the uncertainty about the future value of an investor's bond investments that result from the need to reinvest bond interest payments and redemptions at yields not known in advance. Huh? Well, look, we're getting interest from our bonds. And many people live off that interest. That's what they use for their income. Well, others say, no. I want to fully compound that. So what am I going to do with that money? I have to buy new bonds. And what's going to happen to yields in the future? I don't know. And when the bond matures, I have to take that $1,000 and invest in a new bond. And who knows, interest rates could go down, they could go up. So changing interest rates don't only affect the price of your bonds, they also affect your future income as you need to reinvest the interest income and the bond repayments. If interest rates have fallen, your income level will fall as you reinvest your income and your bond principal repayments. Likewise, if the interest rates have risen, well, your income level will rise. Now, do you have to worry about this if you have a mutual fund? No, the mutual fund managers take care of it for you. Slide number 34. And here's where we get into the book wanting you to think as if you were a mutual fund manager or a pension fund manager. And maybe some of you will be someday. But for the most part, duration. Duration. This is a measure of a bond's price's sensitivity to changes in interest rates and bond yields. It captures both the price, we've already talked about interest rates go up, prices go down, and the reinvestment risk. It's used to indicate how a bond will react in different interest rate environments. The duration of a bond changes as it approaches its maturity date and current interest rates change. And in general, the longer a bond's maturity, the longer its duration. So, it's not exactly the same word, but it's similar. And the higher the bond's nominal rate yield to maturity, the shorter its duration. The shorter the duration, the less potential price volatility. And vice versa. The longer the duration, the more potential price volatility. So, what does this mean? Bond investors who have a specified time horizon, slide number 35, can use bond immunization, don't you just love the term, to increase the probability of successfully achieving their desired goal. The idea is to keep your average duration of your bond investments equal to your time horizon. So if you said, I need this money in 7 years, I'm investing using bonds, you would use these techniques to immunize yourself. You would keep the duration of your bonds to 7 years. And then as you get closer, you would rebalance and keep having a closer and closer, or shorter and shorter duration as you get closer to your time. You would thus be more protected against interest rate-induced price swings. The problem with this is that it requires constant rebalancing of your bond portfolio, since durations of bonds change as interest rates change and bonds get closer to maturity. Do most people have that many bonds that they can swap and move them around? No, most individual investors don't. They just hang on to the bond, eat up the interest for their income, and then reinvest the bond. Who uses this? Right, pension funds, mutual funds, and insurance companies that have millions of dollars to invest. So you see, this is what's going on in your short term or your intermediate term or your long term bond fund, bond mutual fund. The mutual fund managers are making sure that they rebalance the portfolio so that if it's an intermediate term bond fund, the duration is about 4, 5, 6, 7 years. If it's a long term, it's short term, you get the picture. And then general purpose bond funds, they may decide they want to be short or they may decide they want to be long, in which case they're doing a little bit of speculation, aren't they? Yeah. Slide number 36. Bond investment strategies. Well, after we've gone through all this, you should be able to understand the three major investment strategies. The easiest one, I'm sorry, I ask you that at the end. Don't be done. I already told you. The easiest one is the income strategy. You purchase the bond simply for the interest income they produce. And as we said, mostly we have individuals who are high net worth individuals buying bonds because they want you to buy them in $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 increments. The capital gain strategy, well, these are people who are speculating that interest rates will fall. Right. Not an easy thing to do. People are paid tremendous sums of money to do it wrong. And then the total return, which is a combination of both, purchasing bonds for both the income and the possibility of capital gain. So which is the easiest? The income strategy. The hardest is the capital gain strategy. And then the total return is a mixture of the both. Slide number 37, bond laddering. This is yet another strategy of purchasing bonds with staggering maturities. You buy some short-term bonds, long-term bonds, and some intermediate-term bonds. And as the short-term bonds mature, you buy more bonds. It's a very popular strategy with who? Right, pension fund managers, mutual fund managers, since they have a lot of money to invest. What are the advantages and disadvantages of this strategy? When is it a good time to ladder? When is it not a good time? Well, it's a great time to ladder if you think interest rates are going to rise, because then you can have short-term bonds coming due and you getting the interest back and the principal back, and then you can reinvest at higher levels. When's it not a good time? Well, if you think interest rates are pretty darn high and are going to fall, it makes sense for you to be more long-term oriented, doesn't it? But because most people don't have a crystal ball, they decide that they're going to diversify if they have considerable sums of money and buy a ladder. And here's an example of a ladder, slide number 38. This is basically the yield spreads that we discussed. As of March 16, 2012, 3-month Treasury paying 0.06. Yikes. And then the 6-month, 0.13. The 2-year Treasury, 0.36. The 2-year corporate, just putting your money away for 2 years at 0.36, it just doesn't make any sense to me, but hey, what do I know? The 2-year corporate bond, 1.07. So wow, corporations can really take advantage of really cheap money for the next 2 years. And then the 5-year treasury paying 1% a year, 0.99. The 5-year corporate bond, 2.18, which is close to the 10-year treasury bond, 2.29. Just a week and a half ago, it was 1.92. And what happened? Right, a lot of people lost a lot of money if they intend on selling those treasury bonds because interest rates went up, the bond price went down, and that's a big move. It doesn't sound like a lot, 1.92 to 2.29, but calculate the change. Calculate it. Right. Take the difference between the two and divide it by 1.92, and you'll see that's a pretty big move. What? 15-20% move? 10-year corporate bond paying 3.4, 20-year corporate bond paying 5, and then the 30-year treasury paying 3.4. Lock your money away for 30 years at 3.4%. Not me. Slide number 39, we are done with bonds, folks. We are done. So go back, do the calculations. Make sure you can do the yield calculations from the previous session and the valuation calculations from this session. Check out the spreadsheet. And when we come back, we will take a real quick look at preferred stocks and convertible securities. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind, but I'll put it up there. I mean, some of you want to know about it. For the most part, we don't deal with these. And then we're on to asset allocation. And yeah, exactly. We're on the back end of the semester, and all of a sudden things start to happen a whole lot quicker than they did in the beginning of the semester. See you next time, folks.